next presenter is Herben Newell, who will talk about the bike share program that Nagosha was writing on one of the bikes. Oh, I could have grammatically done together better, but you know what I mean. And most of you, if you've been to Toronto, of course, you know the bike share program. How many people here are actually members of bike share? Okay, so you're not strangers to what we've been talking about. Herb is on the advisory board member of CBN. He's the chair of CBN. He's been involved in many cycling activities and jobs, including cycling ambassador, camp bike instructor, briefly a bike courier, a volunteer for CBN as well. Some of you might have seen Todd Parsons in a short clip of that film. Herb was a housemate with Todd when Todd first brought the idea of the bike share program to Toronto, and sadly he was also around for bike share's closing. So he's going to now tell us about everything that happened in between as well, and what the strengths and weaknesses were of our bike share program. Thank you, Herb.
All right, what's up? This is one of the hubs downtown Toronto. Here's bike share. It was a project of the Community Bicycle Network. Ran for 6 years. Had accumulated up to about 2,000 members over that time and about 400 members per year. So in the presentation, I'll talk about how bike share works, its popularity in Toronto, the benefits and drawbacks, why it failed, how it could have worked, and what CBN is doing now. So as Todd was saying in the film there, there are other programs like in Paris, or in Amsterdam, where bikes are just left out for free. We wanted to do something different in Toronto, so it became a library system. There were 150 refurbished or recycled bikes, and they were located at 16 hubs around the city at cafes, restaurants, community centers, universities, or at University of Toronto. And membership started off at $25 a year, went up to $50 a year in 2006, just before it closed, just to help cover more of the cost. So if you join, you can take out a bike from any of the 16 hubs for up to 3 days. So this is the distribution in Toronto. It's mostly downtown. It's not near as dense as places like in Paris. But it wasn't bad. You could be reasonably assured if you went to a hub that you could find a bike. So in some of the locations, they were all small businesses and had a lot of grassroots participation. So some of the businesses were Jet Fuel, Grassroots, Bike Joint, Scouting Court Community Center, the 519, Grapefruit Moon, University of Toronto. Quick overview of how the hubs operated. So someone would have to come, it was very low tech, someone would have to come down to our office on Queen Street, sign a waiver, purchase a membership card, then they could go to any of the 16 hubs and show their card to the hub staff. So if you went to a cafe, you would just go into the cafe and the staff there would volunteer their time to sign bikes out. And so they would go on to the online tracking system and see if a particular bike was there and sign it up for you after taking your membership card. So you give your key, and you go outside and unlock it from the rack. And every bike was individually locked with regular U-locks. So it wasn't a fancy system where in Paris or even the one coming up in Montreal where they have special locks and swipes for each bike. But it worked fairly well. And that was fairly well. So after 3 days, you have to bring it back and get it renewed. And you can do it twice. Because you could take them off for up to 3 days, it meant that you couldn't have as many, the ratio of members to bikes wasn't very high. The online tracking system is our fancy website, which Rick Conroy created. He was just here with his bike earlier. track members, bikes, and hubs. The hub staff would be able to record damaged bikes, stolen bikes, the bikes coming in and out. And it was a way to communicate with the CBN staff. Then the bike share coordinator, Ngosha, who was the narrator for that film, she could look up online and find out the usage, look at which bikes were damaged at hubs, so they could send a mechanic out to get them picked up, and just find out various stats when to send to our funders when we need to tell them they're saving the environment and they want money. So we chose the library model system after looking at a few different systems. The library model avoided problems of the free community bikes. So as in Amsterdam or Austin or Portland, where they just left bikes out on the street, and they figured if they put enough bikes out, that there would be no point in stealing a bike because you could go anywhere and pick it up, drop it off. So I don't think that some people haven't given up on that system. It's potentially possible if you get just enough bikes out there, it actually would work. But in Toronto, we decided to go with walking bikes at hubs. So this meant there was reduced theft and increased revenue because we could charge a membership to the bike. And the other opposite end, which we also didn't choose, was using smart cards or cell phones and specialty bikes. So we didn't have a lot of capital and wanted to keep our operating costs down, so we couldn't do that. Which meant that we got a lot more grassroots involvement, a lot more small business and volunteers. But on the other hand, also made it less convenient because you had to go to one of the, you could only take a bike out when the restaurant or cafe or community center was open. So we had two staff, coordinator and mechanic. It was fairly low staff compared to some large systems. Up to about 75 volunteers. And the hubs would volunteer up to about an hour and a half per week, signing people in and out. And what they got out is they got more traffic through the doors using their services. So over the 6 years, we had up to over 2,000 members. Any 1 year, there were about 400 members. The ratio of users to bikes was about 3 to 1. At any one time, there would be 100 out of the 150 bikes would be out, so that's about two-thirds. And after looking at some stats, they found out that a lot of the users were actually temporary. So people that were just buying a one-year membership and were never renewing it, so possibly a lot of tourist visitors. The average number of trips per user was 6. So that means that one user, on average, took a bike out 6 times. Which hides the fact that there were some people who were using it quite a bit. Probably use it as their main form of transportation, and other people would only take it out once. The cost of the bikes, if you're hearing that figure at 2,000, it seems pretty low. $380 for parts, paints, and labor. All the bikes were donated. But later on, BikeShare bought about 60 bikes from Taiwan. So we need to build up the fleet quickly. And each bike cost $150 initially. But then they found out that these new bikes were fairly cheap. And so a lot of parts were getting replaced and added a lot of work. So probably didn't save that much money. Yearly budget was $100,000, which came to about $250 per member. And the breakdown in revenue was 20% of it was for membership fees. There was a U of T student levy, which the U of T students voted for themselves. It was a 25-cent levy, so they contributed 10% of our total budget. And in exchange, we had up to two hubs on campus. And the rest was all through public and private funders, and that was the big problem in the end. And we had no revenue from advertising, even though it was hoped that that would get something out of that. And some of the funders, Toronto Atmosphere Fund, moving on to sustainable transportation, Eco Action Fund, various private funders were Carleton University, Toronto Dominion Friends of the Environment, Bell Canada, Tree Farm Generation. So some of these were supported bike share over multiple years, but after a while, their amounts got smaller, or they just quit. They wanted to find a fancy new project, so it didn't provide long-term funding. Theft. We had up to 10 to 20 bikes lost to theft per year. But we got up to 10 back just through intensive leafleting. There used to be a little leaflet with all the names of the bikes and well, missing in action. And bike couriers would get up other people and they'd go around the scene. If they see a bike that was on that list, they report it to the coordinator, and it was quite successful. They got quite a few back. So compared to Paris, which has lost 15% or more of their bikes in the first year, we kept it down to a 10. Every bike was personalized, which was probably a lot of people's favorite aspect of it. Every bike was given a number and name. People developed relationships with their bikes. I'm curious to know who really likes a bike for their name. There's some, anyway. People can pay $75 to name one. Here's some names. So, bike share was popular. We had a lot of media hits. It was a Toronto institution. I would like to think it was well on its way to being like the streetcar as a popular image, a tourist draw. It was featured in the Vital Signs report from the Toronto Community Foundation. We got emails and phone calls from Austria to Israel. I had to set up similar programs, a lot with small community groups or universities. And we had a poster auction. Here's some posters. Napoleon. These were the actual names of some bikes. Bike smells. Bike smells. I'm not sure what the name of this one was. Bike suit. Perhaps. Cyclist suit cleaner. Which we only noticed this recently. There's actually, you can see on the one side, there's some people's undies and whatnot. So, yes. I crunched some numbers to try to justify why it's such a great program to have. This is more like some napkin calculations. So the yearly kilometers was 26,000. We avoided up to about 8.3 tons of CO2. It's not a whole lot. The cost to avoid 1 ton of CO2, which is up to about $9,000, I calculated. Whereas you can offset a ton of CO2 just by paying one of those carbon offsets, $10 to $30. So, in that sense, it doesn't seem very a worthwhile project that governments should invest in. But when I looked at the bigger impact, the social impact in terms of reducing injuries, where's my list? Reducing congestion, roadway cost savings, vehicle cost savings, parking costs, air pollution reduction, noise pollution reduction, energy conservation, that adds up to a big chunk. So, might have to just trust me on this, but the I got this from the Victoria Transport Policy Institute. So I calculated if 200 of the bike share users were driving their car before and shifted to using the bike, because the bike share was so cool, then the societal savings would be up to $420,000. And with bike share only costing $100,000, our city was saving $300,000. That's a good reason to invest in a program. It was a good intermodal. It was part of an intermodal. So there was a hub at Exhibition Place where you could use GO Transit, TTC, taxis. There are bike lockers and a bike share hub. So by intermodal, is switch from taking GO Train, get onto a bike share bike, go to work, take it back to the hub, and be back on the train, or take taxi. So some of the successes were there's a high demand for the bikes. There's a good coverage of downtown. Supported a lot of local business, grassroots support, reached low-income users, it's fairly cheap, diverted bikes from the waste stream, created an interest in corporate fleets from, we had interest from Environment Canada, and it was, I like to think that it was a gateway drug. So if people started using bike share bikes and became comfortable riding downtown traffic, that they'd want to get their own bike and commute all the time. The biggest issue was that we didn't have long-term sustainable funding. There wasn't enough funds to increase the bike fleet. It took a lot of time negotiating the locations. You couldn't just move something and move it elsewhere. I had to negotiate with large institutions like the U of T. The rich and the poor paid the same price. So one of our goals with bike share was to target low-income users, but if the rich were going to pay the same price, so we, is this the most efficient way to help out people low-income? You can only sign them out during the opening hours of different businesses. And so, and plus it was probably a really expensive way to provide bikes to poor people. Came up to about $250 per year per member. So why not just give $250 to an individual that can buy their own bike, or just give them the bike for free, and maybe it'll save them a lot more money. So if we had a bike share program here, it's got to be, other than just providing bikes to low income, it's got to be convenient enough and comprehensive that we make a big change in the number of people riding their bikes. So as I said before, bike share and CBN, we failed to attract enough grants. All the grant, the funders wanted to move on to the projects. And all the attempts to get long-term funding from the government failed, and try to advertise the bikes failed. The board and the staff were burnt out after all that time, and the donors going elsewhere. So how could it have survived? Well, we need stable funding from governments or corporations. So there was talk at the time that they might have included a bike sharing program with the street furniture deal. If people aren't aware of what that was, it's where the winner was Astro Media. They're now just in the final parts of providing street furniture in exchange for all the revenue from billboards around the city. So the city decided not to put a bike sharing program in there. Thus, there's an opportunity for CBN to be part of that. And we had attempted to put advertising revenue on the bikes, but who's to say it wouldn't work if we had tried harder and perhaps put big garish ads on the side of the bikes and on the kiosk. It's possible that we could have gotten investment from a carbon offsetting company, which is a kind of a new thing. And the real big wish was that the city would just give us money in their budget. That's just true. CBN's future. So we're trying to be self-sustaining. So what we're doing now is refurbishing and selling donated bikes, give free bikes to marginalized groups, mentor at-risk youth as trainees, and we're involved in education, mechanic workshops, women-only mechanic workshops, do-it-yourself drop-ins with mechanic help.